listening to CFRO Community Radio Station on 102.7 FM. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
Good evening, Co-op Radio listeners. I'm your co-host tonight, Linda Christensen, along with Andrew Resmer. And this evening in the studio, we have two guests exploring some new alternative approaches to healing in the area of medicine, specifically addressing trauma. And our first guest is going to focus on the impact of trauma with respect to affecting and bringing about cancer. And then in the latter half, we're going to be addressing just the overall effects of trauma, emotional trauma, on our physiological health. So to begin with, our first guest here is Caroline Marcolin, who received her PhD in German literature from the University of Salzburg in Austria. She has come to Canada in 1987, has taught German language and literature at Concordia University in Montreal, has published numerous books and essays on Austrian literature, and in 1998, she resigned from her tenured position as an associate professor to pursue her strong interest in naturopathic medicine. For a number of years, she has given workshops on the benefits of nutritional supplements and the traditions of naturopathy in Germany and Austria. And she got exposed to German new medicine during those years and was quite intrigued with the holistic principles that were at work here. After 1 year of intense studying Dr. Hamer's revolutionary discoveries, she then has become a personal tutor of his as well as a mentor. Since then, 2002, Caroline is now a full-time German New Medicine teacher and gives presentations and courses throughout Canada on this topic. We welcome you here, Caroline, this evening.
Hello, thank you very much.
Yes, and if you could, just to begin with, explain to us a little bit exactly what this German New Medicine is all about.
Yeah, I think the best way to familiarize our listeners with German New Medicine is to explain how, in fact, Dr. Hamer made his discoveries. And this is actually quite an interesting story in itself. In December 1979, Dr. Hamer's oldest son, Dirk, died as a result of a very tragic accident. And a few months later, after Dr. Hamer had lost his son, he was himself diagnosed with testicular cancer. And since he was never seriously ill, he immediately wondered if his cancer could be directly related to the tragic loss of his son and all the emotional pain that he was going through. At this point of his career, Dr. Hamer was head internist at a cancer clinic in Munich in Germany, so he was working with cancer patients. So he started to talk to his patients because he wanted to find out if they also had, like him, experienced some emotional distressful shock or event before they got cancer. And by talking to his cancer patients, he quickly learned that they all had, without exception, suffered what we call in German New Medicine an unexpected conflict shock prior to having gotten cancer. But even for Dr. Hamer, who was a standard conventional medical doctor, this mind-body correlation wasn't that new. But, and this is the wonderful results we have, Dr. Hamer took his research a momentous step further. On the basis that all physical processes are controlled from the brain, Dr. Hamer obtained a brain scan of all, a computer tomogram of the brain, of all his cancer patients, and he compared the CT scan with their medical records and also with the patient's history. And what he found was simply amazing and would, in fact, change entirely our understanding of the cause of diseases. What Dr. Ammer found is the following. He found that each cancer is controlled from a very specific area in the brain that controls the cancer. And at the same time, that each cancer is linked to a very specific type of conflict shock that correlates biologically to this area in the brain that controls the cancer. So, for example, he found that lung cancer is caused by a death fright conflict, often as a result of a diagnosis shock, that intraductal breast cancer is a result of a separation conflict, or cervical cancer is the result of a sexual conflict, in other words, of emotional distress in relation to sexuality. But most of all, and this is the quintessence of his research, Dr. Ammer provides the scientific proof that cancer, for example, is not the result of a malfunctioning organism that all of a sudden, for no reason, produces cancer cells, but that cancers and all other diseases, what he calls a result of a meaningful, special biological program of nature that assists our organism in coping with an unexpected emotional distressful event.
I think this is a critical issue, this particular point, because preparing for the show, I went on different publicly available sites on the internet that are intended to inform patients about what cancer is and what causes cancer and what treatments are available for cancer right now. And practically every site says that cancer is this unexplainable change in cells coping itself and growth that we call a cancer. How can you say that this is a natural reaction of an organism to certain particular event?
Yeah. I think the best is to explain this with a concrete example. Mm-hmm. And a good example would be colon cancer.
Okay.
Dr. Ammer identified that the emotional distress or conflict, as we call it, that is a link to the colon is, as he calls it, an indigestible morsel conflict. Well, animals experience such morsel conflicts in real terms when, for example, a food chunk or a bone is stuck in their intestine. So out in nature, this is considered as an emergency situation, so there's a biological emergency program in place to deal with this. And what happens is the following. If such a morsel is stuck in the intestine, the intestinal cells immediately start to proliferate at the site where the morsel is stuck. And the biological purpose of the cell proliferation is to produce more intestinal cells, which is also more digestive juices, so that the morsel can be broken down and can pass. Well, we humans developed over time also a figurative way of thinking. So we can experience this indigestible morsel conflicts also in a symbolic way. And Dr. Ammer found, based on thousands of cases, that we humans suffer this indigestible morsel conflict in a figurative way, and these morsels are often, as he calls it, of an ugly nature. For example, an ugly divorce, an ugly fight over property, over money, over an inheritance, an insult or a betrayal that we can subjectively and figuratively not digest. And the moment we suffer such a conflict, the same program is switched on. And this is what happens. The moment we experience that shock impacts that area in the brain that controls the colon. And as soon as the brain cells receive the shock, they communicate the shock to the colon, to the corresponding organ, and again, the colon cells, the intestinal cells, immediately start to proliferate as if a real food chunk would be stuck there. And it is the cell proliferation which is commonly called a colon tumor. But Dr. Ammer shows, and that is the gift basically we receive through his scientific work, is that such a colon tumor is not malignant. It is a natural biological response program that has been successfully practiced for millions of years of evolution. So In other words, with German new medicine, we don't have to be afraid of cancer. There is no reason to panic anymore or no longer, because now with this research, and I'm just using the example of colon cancer, we understand why do I get a cancer, why do I get the cancer now, why do I get a specific type of cancer, what causes the cancer, and most of all, what is the natural healing of this cancer, which I, if you like, can explain.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole point of doing any research,
yes,
is to apply it in life and try to
so
help.
So let's maybe, mm-hmm. if you like, if that's okay, to continue this example. So Dr. Hammer found, this is another important discovery, that every so-called disease runs in two phases. So we have a conflict-active phase that is activated or switched on the moment we have the shock. And at the moment we resolve that conflict, we enter the healing phase. So if we look at colon cancer, this is what happens on the organ level. The moment this indigestible morsel conflict is resolved, the betrayal, the insult, and so forth, the moment the conflict is resolved, the tumor instantly stops growing because there is no need to produce more of these intestinal cells. And not only does the tumor stop growing, the tumor is now being decomposed, is broken down with the help of specialized microbes. In this case, it's tubercular bacteria or fungi, particularly candida fungi, that now naturally remove the tumor. So the microbes are basically our loyal helpers that are trained, have been trained over the course of evolution to do exactly this, which is to remove the tumor. So we have to understand that the tumor that grew during the active phase basically consists of what we could call disposable cells. And these disposable cells, they differ in size and in shape from the original cells, which is important because the tubercular bacteria can recognize these different cells that serve a purpose, a biological purpose. They can recognize them and now can start to decompose the tumor and remove it naturally. And now, of course, we are seeing symptoms. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because when these tubercular bacteria are active in removing the tumor, there is tubercular secretion produced, which is now excreted through the stool. There's also often blood in the stool because this is a byproduct of the healing phase. There's also night sweats and symptoms like typical healing symptoms like inflammation, swelling, pus, fever, tiredness, fatigue, very important, because we have to understand that this healing phase is a natural rest phase. It's like healing or resting after a big battle. So if you ask me, what is German new medicine therapy? What is the therapy of cancer? Well, and this is the new paradigm, we can call it. All the symptoms that I mentioned, swelling, discharge, pus, fever, inflammation, headaches, fatigue, this is already the natural therapy. This is the therapy. So the biological probing, the second phase, is the natural therapy. So, of course, if that these symptoms are more severe, we need a practitioner, we need a doctor who is familiar with German new medicine and can assist the patient during that healing process. Assisting means mainly two things. First of all, to ease the symptoms without interrupting that natural healing process, and most of all, to keep the patient free of fear and panic, so that this healing phase can go without new conflict shocks, which then, as we understand now, would cause new symptoms.
You partly answer my next question, because according to Canadian Cancer Society, we're going to experience approximately 160,000 new cancer patients this year alone in Canada, and approximately half of people that have cancer are going to 75,000 people are going to die this year of cancer. If this is a natural reaction of body to emotional distress, and there is a natural healing process, Why are people dying?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, first of all, if this conflict is intense, and if the conflict active phase, as we call this stress phase, so if this phase is very intense, the person is extremely stressed out. So the conflict active phase, if it's very intense and lasts for a long period of time, the person can die during that phase. But as Dr. Hammer shows, the person can never die of cancer. The person can never die of cancer cells that biologically serve a biological purpose. People during the conflict active phase, patients die because of extreme stress, of enervation, of sleep deprivation, of weight loss, of no hope because often of a negative prognosis, and just waste away and die. This is when people can die during the conflict active phase. So as Dr. Hammer always points out, a lot of cancer patients die because of the fear. And we have to admit also of very toxic treatments, which then are added to the fear factor into an already worn out, stressed out mind and body. And that, of course, can cause a demise.
So practically what new German medicine says, that the treatments that are being applied in Western medicine right now, chemotherapy and radiation mainly, is just adding to the stress and adding emotional trauma that is causing the cancer to grow instead of getting rid of it.
Yeah, actually, you're formulating this exactly what is happening, because we learned with colon cancer that the colon cancer grows during the stress phase. Well, chemo agents are extremely strong, we call it sympathicotonic agents, so they are very, they emphasize that the stress tonus of the mode of the body. So if we're applying chemo treatment to a cancer that is growing during the stress phase, what happens, logically, this tumor grows even faster. Okay, so during the conflict active phase, when chemo is applied, not even mentioning the toxic side effects, the tumor grows even faster. Okay, so we do have another set of tumors that actually grow during the healing phase. If you want, I can later show you an example. And if a tumor grows in the healing phase and chemo is applied, as a result, the tumor shrinks for the time being, because we are adding to a healing tumor, which is a tumor that grows in the rest phase, a stress agent. So the tumor shrinks for the time being, but as soon as the chemo treatment is over, all the body wants to do is to heal and repair itself, and then it's said, yeah, the tumor is back, the cancer is back, and then there's more aggressive treatment, which of course puts the patients in a vicious cycle.
You said in the beginning that cancer is a natural response of the human body to emotional distress, and as long as distress is present in our psyche, cancer is going to grow.
Yeah.
How then can one deal with issues that surround us, the loss of a loved one, messy divorce, financial distress? How should we live our lives so we can avoid this active phase?
Yeah. I think the best is to present a case, one of Dr. Hammer's. Dr. Hammer has 40,000 cases so far to back all this up. But I give a quick example with a case with colon cancer, and then we can do this in general. This case is about a gentleman, it was many years ago, who developed colon cancer as a result of a very, very indigestible betrayal by a business partner, and in fact he lost his entire business over it. So he developed a colon cancer. He learned about Dr. Hammer's work and met him in person. This is all happening in Germany. And this is the first time that this gentleman learned that his colon cancer was linked to this indigestible betrayal. So the point is is to resolve that conflict, but by understanding that this is linked to this business ordeal and shock and indigestible situation, he understood that he had to bring this whole issue behind him and literally start a new business. Dr. Hammer always said the most practical solution is the best. So this is exactly what the man did. He started a new business, said, okay, life goes on, let's get this behind me. And then this is the point point, he was ready for the healing symptoms. So when he had blood in the stool, when he was tired and all this discharge and the cramps and the fatigue, he knew, well, great, this is exactly what has to be expected. And he went through the healing phase very, very beautifully and was free of cancer.
So instead of being stressed that, oh, gee, I have blood I'm waiting for.
That's right, because now
sign of healing.
We are on top of things because we are understanding what symptoms belong to the conflict active phase, and that's what I'm teaching in my seminars and lectures. What symptoms belong to the active phase? And if it's an active symptom, we know now, learning German New Medicine, yes, I had a shock, I had a betrayal, I had a divorce, I had a separation, an abandonment, and loss conflict. So I have to deal with this as soon as possible, because the sooner we deal with it, the shorter is the active phase, the shorter are the healing symptoms. And if we are constrained, because we cannot just leave a workplace or divorce or, you know, get things behind us quickly, emotionally speaking, then we can, as we call it, downgrade the conflict, minimize the conflict mass by talking about this and so forth. But the most important thing is, even if we have to live with the conflict active phase and the symptoms for a little while, by understanding that the symptom is natural and is not something that we are dying of, right? Mm-hmm. That is preventive medicine at its best.
So instead of treating symptoms, we are actually addressing the cause of the illness.
Exactly, right, yeah.
So could you explain a little bit more about the difference between benign and malignant cancer?
Well, doctor, as we learned already, if I may use that term, there is no such thing as malignancy, right? The term malignant is, and so Dr. Hammer's work shows that, is in fact an artificial term that only indicates that the cell proliferation has exceeded a certain limit. So, and Dr. Hammer exposes this theory of malignant cancer as a theory that has really no scientific basis. So we can sort of drop that malignant term. But what is called malignant? Mm-hmm. Well, again, the term malignant is a term that indicates that the cell proliferation has exceeded a certain limit. So if that proliferation hasn't exceeded that limit, then the tumor is still called benign. And also, if, as I explained, the tubercular bacteria or fungi decompose the tumor in the healing phase, remove it naturally. But what if we don't have the tubercular bacteria or the fungi, let's say because of vaccination, because of overuse of antibiotics, over hygiene, whatever. So if we do not have the tubercular bacteria available or the fungi, the tumor cannot be decomposed, stays in place, encapsulates, and that, if that tumor is detected through an examination, is then also called benign.
Mm-hmm.
So we know now how to understand the terminology of conventional medicine, but malignancy does not exist in nature, because if nature were designed to destroy our organisms through wild-growing cancer cells, we wouldn't be sitting here. Nature is creative. Nature always tries to survive, and since we are part of nature, our organism is also designed and created and programmed, we can say, to survive. And the brain, and this is what Dr. Ma found, is the mediator between our emotions and the body.
So instead of improving nature, Dr. Hammer is trying to understand and use the nature's power.
Absolutely.
To heal.
Yeah.
And out of 40,000 cases that Dr. Hammer studied, and I'm presuming also treated, what is the success rate?
Well, the success rate with no treatment at all before is 98%. With treatment, it's 92% for cancer specifically.
Meaning if someone decided to take a traditional
Just go
approach,
the natural way, yeah.
So if someone didn't take chemotherapy and radiation, 98%.
Yeah, that's his success rate.
I just want to make sure I understand this. Are you saying 98% of cancer patients who do not go ahead with treatments like chemotherapy? Like, I'm not talking about Dr. Hammer's patients, but anybody. Is this what the statistic is referring to?
I asked about Dr. Hammer's 40,000 cases
he treated.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
98% of them without any kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically that was his treatment is just just leave it be? It's a natural...
Well, it's not just leave it be, like, as I said before, and that is important to understand, because if the healing symptoms are severe, and some people go through very draining healing phases, you know, they can hardly get out of bed. Of course, it needs treatment, but it doesn't need a chemical treatment. The treatment is, pain management is very important, for example, and Dr. Hammer in extreme cases uses actually cortisone, because cortisone is also a stress agent. So when the healing phase, which is a vagotonic healing process, is very severe, then he uses sympathicotonic agents in order to slow down this healing process. So slowing down is very important, so it's not too heavy on the patient.
So what's the response of millions of doctors in Western medicine system that are obviously prescribing different ways to treat the cancer to discovery or research that Dr. Hammett presented to them?
Well, it's for doctors who want to learn German New Medicine and to treat according to German New Medicine principles. They basically have to relearn. Relearning means to understand that the cause of cancer was basically misunderstood, or as Dr. Hammer calls it, wrong. We shouldn't forget Dr. Hammer is an internist. He was a standard medical doctor, and
specializing in cancer.
Absolutely, and I'm studying with Dr. Hammer, and there is hardly a conversation where he doesn't say we have seen it all wrong. So we have to imagine he's a man is in his early 40s in those days, and all of a sudden he makes this amazing discovery. Say, colleagues, doctors, friends, we've seen it wrong. But unfortunately, Dr. Hammer's work has been suppressed since the beginning for many reasons, including, of course, political reasons here and others. And but there are more and more doctors and practitioners open to learn this and see that this is how nature works.
So if some of our listeners want to find out more about, including those that professionally deal with patients, want to learn more about German New Medicine, how can they learn that?
Well, first of all, I have a website for those listeners who are not in Vancouver, where I live and teach. The website is http://germannewmedicine.ca. So there is plenty of information there, a very thorough introduction, articles, including articles written by Dr. Hammer himself. I teach regularly, seminars in Vancouver, in Calgary, and also in Montreal. Everybody, really, because we all have to learn this, can take the classes, of course, also specifically practitioners. So these are weekend courses where we can learn in packages very fast about Dr. Hammer's work and the correlation between symptoms and the emotional distress linked to it. In Vancouver specifically, I give regular presentations. The next one is coming up on October the 4th. The special topic is to understand so-called infections. And we learned already a little bit about it, that microbes actually play a beneficial role by removing a tumor. I'm going to explain the link, emotional link to candida infections. And most of all, it's going to be a very exciting evening. We're going to talk about viruses, and I'm going to present research, and not only from Dr. Hammer, that so-called pathogenic viruses don't really exist, because there is such so-called pathogenic viruses have never been scientifically isolated. The evidence of these viruses, that they actually supposedly cause diseases, is based on indirect evidence by looking at the antibody level. But Dr. Hammer's research again shows that the rise of antibody level, the rise of blood white blood cells, of lymphocytes, and so forth, is all part of the healing process. They all assist the microbes in doing the job and repairing that tumor.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is all very interesting. A lot here. I just have a couple of little questions. I'm just wondering about children who get cancer at such a young age, and I mean, I'm just wondering if there aren't children who don't have any evidence of some kind of conflict issue, and yet they might develop cancer.
Well, children, of course, just like every of us, every human being has, often we have children have these conflicts, losses, specifically separation conflicts when the parents divorce, mom goes back to work, self-devaluation conflicts could be caused by, at home, teachers, coaches, putting themselves down, in a sense of expecting a lot from themselves. So now, they have, of course, the same shocks as adults.
Now, isn't there a danger that if in one sense almost anything has a potential to be a conflict issue of some kind? I mean, it sounds like it could easily become quite convenient to simply, you've got cancer, therefore there has to be a conflict issue of some kind, and one could easily find it in almost anything potentially in life. I mean, life is full of conflicts.
Yeah, we have to see two ways, Linda. First of all, if there is a cancer, if there is a rash, because it's not only about cancer, if there is a disorder of mm-hmm. any kind, mm-hmm. then we know, thanks to Dr. Hammer's work, to what type of emotional stress this is linked. But your question is very valid, because these conflict shocks are very individual, subjective event. Mm-hmm. So what one person experienced as a separation conflict could be something completely different for another person. For the mm-hmm. third person, is completely insignificant. It depends on our beliefs, on our values, on our vulnerabilities, and it's a very very good question.
I mean, this is what makes it so ambiguous. Yeah. And so difficult then to really confirm in a solid, conclusive way the links, because it is so subjective.
Yeah, what is important, and thank you so much for the question, is when that unexpected event occurs, it bypasses our, it goes very, very quickly. And it depends exactly what our subjective, my mind associates with the event at the time when it takes place, which then determines what symptoms will occur as a result of the mm-hmm. shock. Mm-hmm. And again, people that have a very strong, religious belief and say, the shocks happen. I remember this very tragic case in Toronto where this gentleman lost in a fire his wife and his seven children, and I followed the case. It was coming up because he said God wanted that, so he resolved it in a split of a second.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So all this has to be taken into account, of course, is part of the so-called therapy, because if the person is in the conflict active phase, we're going to look at all these aspects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one thing I'm also just curious about, there are those, of course, in terms of mainstream science, that claim that there's some kind of genetic link often in terms of cancer. Say if you're, like in my family, my grandmother died of breast cancer, my mother died of pancreatic cancer, then it's assumed, it's often stated there's some kind of genetic link or basis for cancer.
Well, the genetic theory has a lot of unanswered questions. The question I always ask myself, what is the cause of the disease in the first person of the genetic line? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? But let's look at it from a GNM point of view. We can, of course, have a family DHSs. DHS is the abbreviation for conflict shock. Dr. Hammer calls it, just to explain this, a DHS named after his son, Dirk Hammer, who died tragically and caused Dr. Hammer's cancer. So if we have such a conflict shock, it can involve an entire family. Mm-hmm. Dad comes home and says, I lost my job. So all of a sudden, the whole family can have a conflict resulting potentially in the same type of symptoms. I give you another example of a very close friend.
But then it would
be
assumed the cancers would begin at the same time, though, roughly, for all of them, wouldn't it? Instead of so many years later.
Yeah. I give you an example of what you are alluding to. A case of a man has, let's say, MS or ALS. He's in a wheelchair, which is, of course, we know a conflict to it, but I'm making this up. It's a very practical example where you can see this clearly. So dad is in a wheelchair, and his son or his sons, all they see is dad in a wheelchair. So dad says, well, you know how my MS started? I had weakness in my muscle. I had numbness in my legs. So for you and I, if we have all of a sudden a little bit of a numbness or weakness, well, whatever it is. But if those two boys have it, then they say, oh, my God, I'm going to have the same disease as dad. Mm-hmm. The conflict linked to MS is feeling stuck, feeling not being able to escape, not being able to run away. So the wheelchair image itself, or being in the wheelchair, actually amplifies and always keeps the mind reminded that he is stuck. So back to the genetic question, if the son sees that in the wheelchair all the time and has the same symptoms, that dad says this is how it started, the son in this case visualizes or has the shock, I might end up in a wheelchair like that, feeling stuck in there, and what does he get?
So instead of genetically passing certain possibilities of sickness to our children, we're actually passing it through our belief system.
Yeah, exactly. Psychological.
Yeah. So we don't. We can speak of a family DHS. We can speak of a regional DHS. You know, often regions, we're thinking of wars and whatever news are happening or hit a certain region. And then all of a sudden, in that region, we see a certain increase
of certain types of
it's like after 9/11. Of course, I'm following all this. It is documented that since 9/11 in New York, lung cancer is up. And as I explained at the beginning, just shortly, lung cancer is linked to a death threat conflict. So all of a sudden, many, many people suffer a death threat and as a result, develop lung cancer.
So how about smoking and lung cancer?
Yeah, and other
environmental factors.
You know, what about environmental influences? I mean,
that's
in terms of toxins and whatnot.
Carcinogenic agents in the air, pollution.
Okay, let's do this in general first, and then if you want, we can do that. The smoking.
Yeah, I'd also like to give Dr. Swingle a chance to.
Yeah. Environmental factors do play a role for our well-being, of course. So if chemicals in our environment, chemicals in the food and so forth. They weaken our body. They deplete the body of energy. They do not cause, based on Dr. Hammer's work and based on these natural laws, they do not cause illness. However, if we are in the healing phase, let's say, and we have all this discomfort, and where the body needs good nutrition and lots of rest, if we, especially during that phase, have an unhealthy lifestyle and consume, of course, all these chemicals, let's call it, through food and so forth, it can definitely worsen the situation because you were not providing the body with healthy nutrients.
That will nurture a healing process.
Yeah, exactly,
it will undermine the healing process.
So another new way of rethinking.
Okay.
But I want to emphasize we need the good nutrition, we need to stand up so our environment gets clean again, because it is for the benefit of our organism, for the healing.
What I found fascinating studying New German Medicine, that there is a summer paragraph I found where Dr. Hammer claims, tell me your life story, tell me what you believe in, tell me what you have experienced, and I'll tell you which cancer you're going to have, when, and how severe is it going to be. Right. Can you tell us more about links specifically, you mentioned few types of cancer and type of emotional trauma.
Sure. We did the colon cancer. I mentioned lung cancer.
Could I ask specifically about pancreatic cancer? Because I'm just curious in terms of with my mother, just to see.
Good question. In German New Medicine, Dr. Hammer ties his explanations of symptoms into our evolution and how the organism developed over time. So we have to differentiate between the different tissues of the pancreas, because the different tissues developed at different times during evolution and are therefore linked to different type of emotional shocks. So the pancreas as the parenchyma, the organ as such, is linked to an anger conflict. Also, it's very close it's part of the intestinal or digestive system, so it's also in fact an indigestible morsel, which can go to the pancreas. It can also go, by the way, to the small intestine. But later, during the course of evolution, the pancreatic ducts, they were lined with a new cell layer. And this new cell layer, this new tissue, is, since it's a younger tissue, controlled from a younger part of the brain. And the conflict that is linked to the pancreatic duct lining is a territorial anger conflict, an anger that relates to our domain, work-related anger, home-related anger. So to answer this quickly, the pancreas cancer, that is the actual pancreas tissue, that cancer grows during the conflict active phase because it is controlled from the oldest part of the brain. That is the law. Okay, so we know if it's the pancreas that has the tumor, the person suffered and is still active with this anger, indigestible anger issue. While as if the tumor is in the pancreatic ducts, this is an indication that this is a healing tumor, because with all these tissues that are controlled from the new brain, there is during the active phase actually a tissue loss. In this case, there's tissue loss in the pancreas duct lining, so that more digestive juices can be delivered to address this this anger issue, to digest it also. And when the conflict is resolved, the lining tissue is replenished and refilled with new pancreatic cells in the lining, and it is the cell proliferation that is also diagnosed as a pancreatic tumor. So to finish that, we have two sets of tumors. One set of tumor that grows during the conflict active phase, and another set of tumors who are actually curative tumors as a result of a healing process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Long answer, but
we have maybe 1 minute left. If you could just briefly, I know it's tough to do it briefly because of the complexity of the topic, but breast cancer,
breast cancer,
skin cancer,
Glandular breast cancer is linked, so a tumor in the glands of the breast is linked to a worry conflict. So a woman worries about a loved one, a child, a friend is in need, a dad had cancer, has cancer, and so forth. The intraductal breast cancer, which is a different tissue, is linked to a separation conflict, an unexpected divorce, a very typical example. Skin disorders, skin rashes, eczema, psoriasis, and so forth, are linked to separation conflicts as well. The conflict is experienced as if a loved one was literally torn from my skin. So during the active phase, there is a tissue loss. It's like almost torn away from that area of the skin where we felt the conflict, the separation took place. So the active phase is cell loss. We don't see this, only under a microscope. But as soon as this conflict is resolved, the tissue replenishes itself, and that's what we see then as a rash and with swelling and it itchy. And so skin disorders are a healing process.
And prostate?
Prostate is a very interesting conflict. It's originally, the original biological conflict is a procreation conflict. So procreation conflict means that if a man unexpectedly cannot mate, then there is instantly cell proliferation of prostate cells producing more seminal fluid. So when finally mating takes place, he will have more available in order to make sure that the female get pregnant. And Dr. Amer found that this is not only procreation, because males, we all developed over the course of evolution, advanced socially and so forth. So prostate cancer is linked to, for males, to sexual frustration, sexual rejection, and as Dr. Amer calls it, an ugly conflict with a female. So something very upsetting for a man, who then wants to show, that we have to think in biological terms, that you know, I'm a man. A male cannot accept, biologically speaking, of being humiliated, let's say, by a female, because he is the alpha. He is the male. So the prostate instantly responds.
Okay, for more details, we are going to refer our listeners again to your website, which is?
GermanNewMedicineOneWord.ca.
Thank you very much. And one more time, when is your next lecture in Vancouver?
October the 4th. It's down in the West End at the Best Western Sands Hotel at the corner of Davie and Denman, 7055 Davie Street. We start at 7:15 and lasts until 10 o'clock.
Thank you.
I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm sorry to be calling you so late, but these attacks lack any conscious social grace. And these stacks of paranoia in my brain, they keep showing up as spots upon my face.
Welcome back to Conscious Living Radio. Our next guest here in the studio is Paul Swingel, PhD. He was a professor of psychology at the University of Ottawa from 1972 to 1997 prior to moving here to Vancouver. He's a fellow of the Canadian Psychological Association and was lecturer in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School from 1991 to 1998. And during the same time period, he was an associate attending psychologist at McLean Hospital in Boston, where he also was the coordinator of the Clinical Psychophysiology Service. Dr. Swingel was chairman of the Faculty of Child Psychology at the University of Ottawa from 1972 to 1977 and clinical supervisor from 1987 to 1997. He is currently here in British Columbia as a registered psychologist and is certified in biofeedback and neurotherapy. Welcome to the studio, Dr. Swingel.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, indeed. And I understand that you also are engaged in somewhat more innovative research in terms of trauma itself and the effect it has on a human being physiologically. Could you tell us a little bit about what you have discovered here and the types of approaches you have to addressing trauma?
Sure. Trauma is something that is registered in the brain, as we've just heard. And one of the things we do when we do our initial assessment with an electroencephalograph is you can actually see trauma in terms of brainwave activity. The interesting thing is that some individuals respond to trauma by becoming disabled in one sense, in a physical sense, as our previous guest has been discussing, and also in a psychological sense. But the interesting aspect of it is individuals that are exposed to exactly the same trauma, for example, combat veterans, three of them, you know, may be disturbed by it, but only one is disabled by it. And the question is, what are the predisposing factors that give rise to trauma resulting in some disability.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we've found is that there's an area of the brain that's associated with stress tolerance. And if there's a deficiency in that stress tolerance area in the brain, then that predisposes a person to being disabled by a trauma. Now, when we're working with children, for example, we get children that are referred with attention deficit disorder. It turns out that's a trauma.
Oh, really?
And if an individual if the brain is showing the signature for trauma, one of the cognitive effects of that, I mean, above and beyond all the emotional aspects of it, is it affects processing of information.
Mm-hmm.
That the individual's short-term memory and the ability to transfer the information to the short-term working registers is affected. Now, we also, as our previous guest has pointed out, trauma is related to enabling certain physical disorders. So what everybody has experienced is when they're stressed, they're more vulnerable to a cold, for example. I mean, that's, everybody has experienced that sort of thing. So at the simplest level, when we see an individual who shows the trauma signature on the brain maps, then the first thing that we want to do is get them to be able to resolve that trauma. And we have a lot of ways of doing that. One is with neurotherapy, in which we change the brain activity associated with the trauma, and that releases the trauma for processing. There are other ways of handling that, of course. Dr. Siegel, a long time ago, I'm sure our previous guest is familiar with Siegel's work in terms of therapy with women who had breast cancer. And individuals that have support systems and mechanisms for resolving conflict do better than those that don't.
Is this Bernie Siegel?
Yeah.
The books by Bernie Siegel?
Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when we have an individual who comes in for sleep disturbance, for example, in addition to brain activity that prevents the individual from being able to calm themselves, if we see a trauma signature, the trauma is very likely to be interrupting sleep. Now, the signature associated with trauma is the brain's trying to protect itself against abreaction, that is emotional reaction. And the waveform that is blunted by trauma is the waveform that's associated with visualization. So when I was in McLean Hospital, I treated a lot of combat veterans who had post-traumatic stress disorder. All of them showed this particular trauma pattern. And what we do with the neurotherapy is to normalize brain function. When you normalize brain function, the emotional reaction to that is a processing of that traumatic material. And that can be very rapid. The body has normal mechanisms for dealing with this kind of conflict. Again, as our previous guest has spoken about, that there are normal processes for handling these things. The problem with trauma is that normal process gets blocked.
Now, is that where people themselves somehow choose to block it, or it just sort of happens automatically? Or
it's an overwhelming factor. If the individual has a predisposing condition of poor stress tolerance, then they're overwhelmed by this. And the brain is trying to protect itself against the classic symptom of trauma, which is emotional flashback, which is a horrible thing to experience. You're right back in the conflict again. And what the brain is doing is preventing or trying to subdue or suppress that abreactive flashback process. Now, the problem with that is by trying to suppress that traumatic material, you have other effects associated with that, cognitive effects, blunting of emotionality.
Okay.
And the previous speaker was referring to some of the physical consequences of that blockage. We see a lot of cancer patients, a lot of patients with all kinds of disorders, and getting the brain into normative functioning markedly accelerates the healing process.
And how do you normalize?
Neurotherapy involves three general processes. Everything is volitional in the sense that we're moving the brain towards normative functioning.
How?
The first is neurofeedback. We let's assume that we're trying to suppress a waveform. We set it up so that when the brain is doing what we want it to do, the person will hear a tone or see something move on the computer monitor. If it's a child, we set it up so that they play a video game with their brain or make electric trains move with their brain. And the electric train will only move when the brain's doing what we want it to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or the icon, Pac-Man moves across the screen only when the brain's doing what we want it to do. And that moves the brain to its normative functioning. We've developed what are called brain drivers. And there we measure a particular aspect of brain functioning. Based on that measurement, we stimulate with light, sound, microamperage stimulation, EMF fields, and so forth, to nudge the brain into more normative functional ranges. So we have a lot of techniques that are non-invasive that move the brain towards normal functioning. So
it's a form of practically fooling the brain into working normally.
No, I think the better analogy is if you have a weakness in the body, you go to the gym and you exercise that area of the body more vigorously than other areas to balance things.
Right.
Now, you're not fooling the body. I mean, you know exactly what you're trying to do. So
I guess the difference is that we're using brain in order to build muscle. Here we are using brain in order to change brain to work differently.
Yes.
In a healthier, more functional way.
We can think of the brain as a muscle, too. The other aspect of neurotherapy is optimal or peak performance training. Elite athletes do this. The team that won the World Cup in soccer, the Italian team, every man on the team did neurotherapy. It was considered their secret weapon.
Huh.
That's why they made all those foul shots.
So this is officially called neurotherapy then?
That's correct. And by the way, it's all FDA certified and compliant. Mm-hmm. There's nothing alternative about this in that sense.
Mm-hmm. And how can you utilize this technology with healing or helping cancer patients?
Well, a lot of this depends on where they are in the cycle. Again, as our previous guest indicated, if they've had a lot of certain forms of treatment, it really makes treatment more difficult, or can make it more difficult. But the first thing that we do is normalize brain function so that the central nervous system can quiet the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some healing waveforms that we encourage, in which the mind quiets and the body quiets. Almost always the individual is under some other medical treatment for these conditions, and the treatment that we're doing is adjunctive to that.
Mm-hmm. And if our listeners cannot afford to go and pay hundreds of dollars for treatments with an expert in neurotherapy, what can you give them some ideas? How can they help themselves at home?
Sure. By the way, since this is an FDA certified and compliant treatment, it is covered by extended medical.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But in any event, there are some very straightforward things that we can do. We've been doing this for millennium. Mm-hmm. And, you sit down and you focus and clear the mind, as the Eastern meditators have been doing for thousands of years. What that does is it increases slow frequency in the back of the brain, which helps with stress tolerance. So there are a lot of mind hygiene things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
The second is what I call mind cancer, which is the resentments and the anger and the negative thinking that overwhelms you. I mean, if somebody wrongs you and you have a resentment, it occupies your entire thinking. I mean, mm-hmm. it just overwhelms. And if we talk about, that's the one area where I think we really do have metastasis in terms of a resentment. It just overwhelms and takes over the entire brain. Now, if you think of how do you reverse that in terms of clearing the mind of resentments, that's what the meditators are doing.
Mm-hmm.
There are other relaxation procedures that you can use as well. And the elderly, stay away from TV. It'll kill you. Reading.
Stay away from TV.
Oh,
In what sense? In the sense of the
television keeps me in business.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Why?
All the violence and all the
way. Is it because of the content, or is it just physiologically the effect of
both.
It? Both.
If a child, a very young infant, if television is used for babysitting, there's an area of the brain that mm-hmm. doesn't develop. And if you think about it, television is maintaining interest with constant stimulation.
Yes.
They don't have to use imagination, so that whole area of the brain is not being stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of evidence on the effects of television on health, on cognitive process, mm-hmm. on learning with kids. And the elderly, if they retire in front of a TV set, they're dead in 18 months. I mean, they're just extremely bad.
We have only 30 seconds left. Could you tell our listeners where they can find more information about what
you
work?
Sure. Yes. They can give my office a call. That's 604-608-0444. And we have a ton of information on our website, and it's swingleandassociates.com. You spell out the end.
Swingleandassociates.com.
Thank you very much.
Okay, great. And we'll put that up on our website as well.
Okay.
So people, thank you very much, Dr. Swingle and Caroline.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Conscious Living Radio, a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, the emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect a commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation. Tune in every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. For information about our past and future programming and free downloads of shows, go to consciousliveringradio.org.